Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Crime Scene Queens. And once again, your girls are at the International Association for Forensic Sciences Conference in Omaha, Nebraska. And we have another great interview on the books from this show, which is such a great way to connect with our peers. And we have the pleasure this week of connecting with Jared Bradley. Now, you might not know who he is, but you will by the end of this episode. And if you're in the field, if you don't know Jared's name, even though you probably do, you might know his father's invention, which is now becoming a more streamlined innovation in forensic science. For some history, I am Laura, your friendly resident CSI and field mouse.
And I'm Shelley, your legal beagle and your courtroom cat.
And when I was a little baby field mouse, like a little baby one.
Jumping in the field.
I worked for a agency that had a decent amount of funding, and we were able to purchase the MVAC machine. Now, if you don't know what the MVAC machine is, just hold your shorts because you're about to find out. But Jared flew to our agency, trained us how to use this machine. And since then, we have been able to collect all kinds of evidence from items that we would not even typically collect because it was in the past just impossible. So it's super exciting to talk to Jared.
Oh, my gosh. This is an amazing, amazing piece of equipment and so informational. So I'm so excited for Jared's presentation on this. And hopefully we can actually be able to put up some videos. So I think we might be able to pull off some videos. So definitely, everybody, stay tuned because Jared is amazing and his product is just, it blows my mind still.
That's right. So here is our interview with Jared Bradley. So welcome to Crime Scene Queens, Jared.
Hey, thanks. It's an honor.
Yeah, we are so
Thank you
lucky.
So much for being here. And first, you know, I just want to say, since we are live and we're actually at the show, we are physically in the show. So there might be some random people that walk by and say something. Yeah. So, you know, this is live in the show.
Pardon our background noise.
Exactly.
Exactly. So when I met Jared, he was teaching me how to use this equipment. And the reason why my crime scene unit was interested is because the local sheriff's office, which was BSO, so Broward Sheriff's Office, had solved a decent amount of cold cases with the MVAC machine.
Okay.
So we then used it and had the ability to extract DNA evidence from our more complicated items where we wouldn't normally have been able to pull that type of thing. So
I'm so excited.
I know. So I think that we need to Tarantino and go further back. Can you tell us about the creation of the machine and like what it does?
Oh, of course. So the MVAC is, if you can think of just like a medical grade carpet cleaner. So
it's good.
It sprays a sterile solution down onto a surface and then vacuums up whatever you're looking for. So when we got started actually in around 2007 is when we launched the product.
Okay.
It was originally designed by my dad, who was a PhD in microbiology and animal sciences.
Shout out to Pops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go way back to 1993, I'm not sure you guys were even born by then.
I was born in 1984, Jared.
Okay.
I was almost graduated high school, so
there we are. Thanks for the compliment, by the way.
Yeah, you guys look fantastic then.
Thank you.
Okay, so in 1993, there was an E. coli outbreak, especially on the West Coast, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, where a bunch of hamburger from Jack in the Box.
I recall.
Yeah. And it caused a lot of people to go into kidney failure. And I think 6 kids even died from that.
Yes,
well,
I do remember.
My dad grew up on a ranch in Idaho. And so, of course, tainted beef and the beef industry is really going to bother him. So he started evaluating the problem and realized that the upfront sampling was really the weak spot. So once he identified it, then he had to figure out how do you solve the problem. And you got to get more aggressive. If you're looking for one cell, one E. coli or salmonella cell or something like that on a huge surface, how do you cover that entire surface area and get deeper down into the cracks and crevices where this might be hiding?
Right.
Well, what better than a wet vacuum? So because then it can get down into those little nooks and crannies
exactly.
and pull it out. Well, so we launched the product in 2007, and the food industry, wasn't quite as interested as we thought they would be.
Okay.
And so...
Sucks for them, good for us.
Yeah.
So the moral of that story is cook your food.
Yes.
Yes.
And fortunately for us, around 2011, well, actually about 2010, if I remember right, a college buddy of mine who had gone into the FBI, I'd gone into the military and he'd gone into the FBI, and I was explaining what the MBAC was to him in the context of collecting E. coli.
Okay.
And he was like, man, that would have been awesome on some of my crime scenes.
Okay.
And so, lo and behold, the light bulb goes off, and I'm like, well, maybe we ought to go test it and really make sure that this thing's going to work. And so we took it to a lab there in Salt Lake City and had them test it for us. And they came back, and they were like, we've never seen recoveries like this.
Wow.
Love that story. It takes one person.
That is amazing.
It's just thin threads, right?
That's great.
So we were really fortunate that we had it tested, and because we still had high hopes for the food market, but by 2011 we were like, you know what, this isn't going to work out. So we pivoted into forensics in 2012, and that's where we've been ever since.
Wow.
So what does MVAC stand for?
Well, the M is actually, it used to stand for microbial.
Right.
But, that doesn't make much sense in forensics.
Right.
So we shortened it. And everybody called it the MVAC anyway. Because,
so it's just the origin story is that it was originally microbial, right?
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
But now it's just the machine that everybody wants and not everybody can have.
Yes. It might be a little pricey, but worth it. So are there some cases that you can recall, and you don't have to say names or anything, but, just something that you can recall that this has made a huge impact?
Well, the case that put us on the map was a case from 1996. A girl named Crystal Bislanowicz was bludgeoned to death with some river rocks, and they were the granite sharp, really rough rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And there were six of them total, but two of those were about 10 pounds, small enough that you could actually grip it with your hand, but large enough and definitely sharp enough that it could cause a lot of damage. And he had used two of those rocks to bludgeon her with.
Wow.
And they had tried to swab those multiple times throughout the years, but in 2013, Sorensen Forensics, who was actually the ones that private lab that tested the MVAC initially, they bought a system and they started reaching out to different agencies. And this is one of the cases that they reached out to, and they were able to vacuum those rocks, and they got plenty of DNA, and lo and behold, they caught the guy.
So what I hear you're saying is that you can take something that has been, swabbed over and over and over again and still get results. That's incredible, because a lot of times, if you use a certain type of process, then it destroys other processes.
Yeah, like if you're going to swab a rock, it's going to ruin the cotton.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be really hard to swab and to try to get DNA. But then if you swab it and you don't get DNA, then have you lifted all the DNA potentially off of the surface? Or
no, not with swabbing. University of Illinois Chicago actually did a study, and they showed that upwards to 80% of the DNA that's deposited on evidence never actually makes it into the extraction tube.
Huh.
And personally, I think...
CSIEDU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Personally, I think the majority of it is left back on the evidence. And the reason I say that is because both Washington State Patrol and the FBI, as part of their validation studies, took evidence, swabbed it first, and then MVAC'd it. And on some of those substrates, the MVAC still collected 66 times more than what the swab originally did.
Wow.
So even though the swabbing may take some of that material, I think the majority of it's leaving behind.
Wow.
And the reason it's not a problem is usually, like, if you have a blood spatter, semen stain, something like that, where you can, visibly see it.
Uh-huh.
There's so much there, it doesn't matter what you collect it with.
Yeah, that's true. And so this machine that we're speaking about, there's a huge machine That it, well, I say huge because huge. I'm five
it's
feet.
It's like the size of a suitcase.
Okay, yeah, it's the size
to
of a suitcase.
To Shelly, it's huge.
I'm 5 feet tall. And I, yeah, like, okay, so it's huge to me. It's the size of a suitcase. So there's this machine.
So far, we've got a huge machine and it's super expensive. So
this is going to be great.
We're just selling hell out
of
this thing.
Well, I think what
I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I'm trying to get you to tell me that, no, it's really worth it and it's not that expensive and it's really not that big because it's the size of a suitcase.
I'm a guy. I don't pick up on hints very well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Laura, help me out here.
So what Shelley's trying to articulate is that while the machine might be more expensive than like your metal detector,
obviously,
the return on investment as far as solving super violent crime or even, you know, large scale burglary is in, you're going to get it back in spades. And you're able to then go back to some of the cold cases and recover new items of evidence. So while it's not pocket change, and it shouldn't be because the science and the research that went into it has merit and deserves to be rewarded, we're able to use these machines when we have the budget. But for, you know, I know I've talked about before how I've worked for an agency that had a lot of funding and an agency that didn't.
Yes.
So for my agency that didn't, I'm pretty sure you co-signed that this was fine with you, Jared. We would buy the kit. Which means like the filter, the tubing, and the bags. And then we would borrow the physical machine that does the job from the sheriff's office. So there are ways to make sure that we're...
Oh, so there's ways that if there's really not a lot of funding that we could potentially...
There's a workaround.
Yeah, there's work... Oh, so maybe that's what I was trying to say.
Well...
Thank you.
It's actually, I remember when we got RM back at my first agency, we named it Wally.
Oh my goodness,
I think
Wally.
It's cute. I think that's the machine really is cute. I'm sure cute wasn't what you were going for, Jared. But
yeah, Jared doesn't like cute. He doesn't like, I don't know.
Well,
don't...
you know, we'll have to talk to the designers that, the engineers that actually designed it, but, as far as the cute goes. But
so the design and the what I was trying to get the listeners to visualize. So if they can't visualize it because I'm apparently not good at explaining things,
We're just giving you a hard time.
The components of the machine? Like when I say there's a kit, you know. Like,
yeah. So the kit, I wanted to explain the kit. But before that, is there like a website that maybe they could go to?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Our website is www.m-vac.com.
Mm-hmm. Not underscore, not dot, hyphen.
Hyphen.
Yep. Yeah. And you can also go to, we have a YouTube channel. MVAC systems, you know, M-VAC systems.
That's great. So they can see exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
And then
what
Laura was referencing is almost like an hourglass shape.
I mean, maybe I'll let Jared do this, but there's a couple of different components to the machine. I would imagine the listeners would be interested is how you would wet vac or rug doctor a piece of evidence.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? Like, what are the steps? What are the unique components of the MVAC machine that make it work?
Well, you have the durable item, which is, you know, the suitcase-sized machine that houses the vacuum pump, the solution delivery system, you know, the components that you're going to use over and over and over again. And that's really the engine behind the entire machine. So then you have the actual collection device. You have what we call an extension tubing, and that enables you to take the collection device away from the machine, and you can go up to 60 feet away and still be able to collect.
Wow.
I'm not sure you'd ever do that with a piece of evidence, but
yeah.
And then you have the solution bag, which is a 1 liter bag. If you imagine an IV in a hospital,
yes.
everybody's been in the hospital and seen an IV, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's where we got the idea. And then those are the, you know, once you attach them all and connect them, then, you know, obviously that's what you use to do the collection. And then the concentration step is after that. And that's where you use a small 0.45 micron filter. And that enables the filter captures all the DNA and then it allows all the liquid to flow through it. Mm-hmm. So you can cover a super big surface area, but it's still concentrated on that small filter. And that filter is actually what they send to the lab.
Right. So the filter is what I was describing as like, it's kind of an hourglass like shape.
Yes.
And then the center part of the hourglass where the sand passes through is thicker. And that's where the filter is. And it looks like one of those little makeup pads, kind of. You know, like the flat circle. Okay, why would you know that, Jared? Never mind.
Yeah. Okay. You're looking at Jared like he would know, and I don't think he would know. But yes, that's exactly what it is. Yeah,
like those
it
looks little like things that you like put like astringent on your face.
Yes. Or you know,
I've been married 30 years. I've seen them.
Okay. Well, thank goodness.
Thank you for your humor.
Yes, thank you. I remember I had a series of scenes at my second agency, and I had to MVAC a bunch of towels.
Oh, geez.
And it took me to use proper best practices for the machine quite some time because the nozzle of the handheld part is what is like an inch or what's the diameter of that piece?
Oh, it's 35 millimeters or okay. 1 3/8.
Okay. So yeah.
Yeah. Almost an inch and a half. Yeah. About the size of a 50 cent piece.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So you have to like make this in like stripes. And then, so you deposit the water, and then with the same nozzle, you go back over it to suck it up. So it took me like 4 hours to do these towels. And next time I saw Jared, I'm like, hey, I'm going to need something with a little bit more width. And he goes, well, we're not going to do that because literally everybody except for you has actually asked for a tinier nozzle because they don't want you going over blood stains, right? Right, you're not supposed to like MVAC over blood.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the blood most likely is going to be victim blood.
Right. And if I'm MVACing a victim's shirt, it's going to be victim DNA on there anyway. But Jared was saying that like when there's spatter on clothing,
yeah,
people want to be able to maneuver around blood spatter.
Around the blood spatter, absolutely.
So I was the only one filing the request for a wider nozzle, so he told me no. So, Jared, usually when there's new technology in forensic science, people are kind of snide to adopt it. So why do you think the MVAC didn't have what I perceive to be, I'm going to make sure I say it that way, as much trouble kind of passing the test? I've attended a bunch of new technology seminars and those things all went away, but the MVAC did not. So why are you guys so awesome?
Why are we so awesome? That is a pretty loaded question.
Well, in your own answer.
Honestly, I think we've just been persistent enough that we just said, yeah, we know this thing has a place. We know that it's solved a number of cases already. Therefore, yeah. It'll solve more. And, you know, just because somebody turns it down doesn't mean everybody will. And so we just kept pushing until we found enough people that eventually they were like, yeah, you know, we'll do this. So,
do you remember the first agency that adopted it?
The first agency that adopted it.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what?
You should totally know the first one that popped your cherry there, Jared. Come on. Your MVAC, Jared.
All right.
Jared's like so mad that he agreed to do this now.
He's like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, Sorensen Forensics was the first one to actually buy one.
But I mean, like a PD, because we're the most cynical sometimes.
No, I would disagree with that.
Okay, fine.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right.
I've found that
I can be disagreed
lab,
with.
Lab, well, of course you can. But
me.
No, the lab people are much slower to adopt it than the actual agency folks.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, that's really been the kind of the bottleneck.
Okay.
Has been some of the labs.
Okay.
But as far as, you know, the agencies that used it first, most of those are in Utah because that's where Sorensen is.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they weren't using it through us. They were trying it out through Sorensen first for the first couple of, you know, even the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And as they started solving cases, then, you know, agencies like you guys started hearing about that. You know, we were attending conferences, but it wasn't until probably we pivoted into forensics in 2012, and it really didn't start even selling at all until, I don't know, 2014.
That's probably when I saw you.
Yeah.
And you know what it was for us, because I specifically remember it was the case solved at BSO, or Broward Sheriff's Office. Like, they did something, which I think might have also been a rock. Do you remember? They did something magic over there, and my agency was like, go find out what that is.
Yeah.
And then our man over here came over and, oh, you know, Jared, I think I even still have on my phone, not that our audience can see, the a picture of me in that training.
Oh my gosh. That's yeah. amazing. So we might have to actually, okay, so.
I'll post it.
Yes.
On our,
yes.
You guys follow Crime Scene Queens on Instagram and you can see this picture Absolutely. Of Bebe Laura oh. practicing with the MBAC machine.
Yes.
Back and then, in 2014.
Yes.
I don't know.
8 years ago.
You know what? Yeah. I'll check the metadata on the picture and maybe it was, I can have a more precise answer.
I'm definitely interested and, you know, I want to make sure that whether you're a large agency or a smaller agency that, you know, as Laura was saying that there, if you can't afford the entire machine, not that it's super expensive, but if you can't afford the entire machine, then you'll work with agencies or they can cross agency as long as they get the reusable or I'm sorry, not, I guess it's not the reusable, but the little.
Oh, the actual collection. Oh, well, that's the filter. Yeah. Well, okay. So just so all of your listeners understand,
right.
you know, after you buy the machine, it's about $100 per sample is just kind of a rule of thumb.
Okay.
You know, and but on a murder case, you know, mm-hmm. a typical homicide based on data costs about $1 million.
I would be absolutely willing to spend hundreds of dollars yeah. if it would solve the problem.
Oh, yeah.
You know, solve the case.
And they have upwards of 235,000 cold case homicides in the yeah. United States. So you figure, you know, with all of the, there's a reason those are cold, and that's
yes.
because they can't find any leads. You know, they've already processed the evidence as well as they can.
Correct.
So how many of those could be solved with better DNA collection? You know, who knows?
Absolutely. But, yeah. And it's, you know, it's like all of a sudden a lot of cases are being solved because of DNA, you know,
yeah.
back we didn't have DNA and yeah, now that we do have it, it's crazy. It's
the cost to society. Of,
exactly.
Of just those homicides being
yeah.
cold cases
yeah.
is massive. You're talking millions and millions, if not billions of dollars worth of value there. And so, yeah, to kick down a few million dollars mm-hmm. For more MBAC sampling and more DNA testing,
that would be
it
phenomenal.
Might solve some of those.
Yeah, absolutely,
it's not, you know, in grand scheme of things, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So,
do you have any private forensic companies that use the MBAC? Like, I'm just thinking about people that do like where a family might solicit the reinvestigation of like their loved one's murder. Do you have any like agencies like that or consulting?
Well,
places?
There's a lot of not necessarily consulting businesses, but more. Both the private labs and mm-hmm. like cold case societies like ASOC and other cold case, you know,
right. Yeah.
Yep. Research Institute.
Okay.
Places like that is where I would send families because number one, they have the expertise. Number two, they already have experience with solving those cold cases. And so, yeah, there's a lot of organizations like that that are all over the place where a family member could go
mm-hmm.
And another thing about the cold case societies is they have a lot of credibility with the actual law enforcement agency where they might be able to open a case, mm-hmm. whereas normally a family member doing research, mm-hmm. It's pretty difficult.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about cold cases because I feel like that's like a really good piece of karma work for the podcast. Like what's a case that has come across your awareness lately that the MBAC has helped? Solve, whether it be putting a name to a person or a conviction or a suspect or what's
well,
top
I think
of mind.
One of a case that was just cracked in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just finished a number of my own episodes, you know, podcast episodes
right.
with it. The victim's name is Lena Reyes Geddes.
Okay. Was she okay. unknown? Before that?
She was a Jane Doe
oh, okay.
homicide.
Wow. Okay. Just as important as finding the killer, guys, is giving yep. these people names.
Absolutely.
So it was a Jane Doe homicide for 20 years.
Wow.
She was originally from Mexico. Not sure, you know, exactly what her history is, but mm-hmm. she ended up marrying this guy in Ohio named Edward Geddes.
Okay.
And just a couple of years later, she disappears, essentially. And... her husband didn't even report her missing.
Oh, that's not a red flag.
And, yeah, there it is.
pleasant.
Yeah, what a piece of work this guy was.
He sounds fun, Jared.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is back in 1998, I believe.
Okay.
And in 2001, Edward Geddes actually committed suicide. So I'll bet you this,
Welp.
You know, killing his wife and what he did to her probably eventually got to him, but he took the coward's way out there. So anyway, right. Yes. What happened was somehow they think basically he transported her from Ohio all the way out to Utah.
Oh,
geez.
So she was tied up in plastic with duct tape in a sleeping bag and then rolled in a carpet. And then she was just kind of dumped in the deserts of Utah. And
wow.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, a couple of guys found her.
That's a lot of layers to that. Yeah. That's a Russian, one of those little Russian dolls.
Yeah.
Many different compartments that she was rolled into there, not to make light of her situation, but that's the first thing that came to my mind is, damn.
Yeah.
Personally, and you know, the detective that, you know, helped solve this from Utah, mm-hmm. Brian Davis, an amazing guy. And, you know, he had a lot of help, obviously, with, you know, Francine Bardol and Pure Gold Forensics and other folks. But
shout out to Brian and Francine.
There you go. Yeah.
Francine, she's a extraordinaire.
Can't wait to meet you one day, Francine.
Come be a guest on our show.
You should. Yeah. Should. She's got her own lab now.
Nice. Wow.
Kind of serology lab. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She's all sorts of expertise there. So
that's amazing.
But what happened, I think, is he killed her in Ohio, knew that he had to transport her a long way. So he actually froze her.
Oh, how did he do that? Do you know? Like, how do you freeze? Did he literally like stick her in like one of the,
or dry ice?
Do we have any idea how that happened? Because I've never heard of somebody.
Stick her in a freezer.
I guess.
Stick her in a freezer?
So yeah.
Clean
was
out,
she disarticulated?
Know.
Or was she complete?
Mostly complete.
Because, I mean, not many people.
Her fingertips were removed.
Oh, so right. That there was a potential
so they couldn't
for
identify
no.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. He really
Which
didn't want her to be found.
You know, why she ended up being unidentified for 20
Correct.
Years. So,
correct.
You know, right. Plus being originally from Mexico and then missing from Ohio, and they find her in Utah.
In Utah. Yeah, that you wouldn't put that together.
Well,
yeah.
Those databases don't talk as we've
yes.
heard.
Yes.
Yeah, mentioned this week.
So fast forward, they finally identify her, which is a pretty amazing way that happened. So literally within 5 days of each other, the Utah detectives saying, you know what, we have nothing to lose. Let's put a picture of her, post-mortem picture of her.
Oh, but like a forensic art?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was, you know, it was really well done. Mm-hmm. And then within 5 days of each other, the Youngstown, Ohio, mm-hmm. also put out her picture.
Oh, that.
Wow.
And,
wow.
You know, like a Namus type of,
yeah.
of
right.
a photo. And yeah. some person in California happened to see the two and said, I think that's the same person.
Go California.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, all these people contributing to it, and it's
wow.
just absolutely amazing. So, yeah, that's how they identified her. But they had to go through tons of steps to get, you know, comparison DNA from her sister
yeah.
in Mexico and all these
wow.
other crazy things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That poor thing.
The efforts that the detectives and the agencies did to get her identified
mm-hmm.
was just phenomenal. And then it took them another 4 years to actually solve the case. But the way they ultimately did it is the rope that she was tied up with,
mm-hmm.
they finally submitted that to Francine,
mm.
who MVAC'd it. And they got, now, to put this into context, they had submitted that rope to the state lab multiple times
mm-hmm.
with basically no results.
No results.
The only
Correct.
DNA they ever found on there was Lena's.
Wow.
But
gotcha.
When
okay.
Francine did it,
mm-hmm.
she got 117 nanograms of DNA material.
That is incredible.
Okay,
okay,
but like for our audience, like what does that mean, Jared? Like that much content?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay,
like of
so
DNA. Yep.
It takes a half of a nanogram of DNA, which is basically 10 cells.
Okay.
To create a full DNA profile.
Okay.
Okay.
And they collected 117 nanograms.
Oh, love that story.
And 91% of it was male DNA.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, that's
yeah.
helpful
Perfect.
For...
So
yeah.
that's huge.
So I actually have talked about cases and stuff. And so there was a case where there was a rope and the person was a suspected suicide, but the family believed that it was homicide. However, the person was found hanging off of a balcony. And on
as you do.
Yes. And on the rope, they didn't use the MVAC. Instead, they actually just did the regular, you know, typical DNA swabs. Well, when you do a typical DNA swab, you're only swabbing a portion of that rope. And with the MVAC, it seems like you can swab the entire rope.
If you need to, yeah.
Okay.
Which is incredible. Because, in other words, if you're doing a portion, then,
We found the baby Laura picture. February 27th, 2015, baby Laura. There's the famous MVAC hat. Is that it?
There it is.
Is that the red hat that you always teach us with?
No, that's a rope.
Oh, see, rope.
Oh, a rope.
Okay, so
rope.
See this black hat that's on there?
Yeah. We're going to post this. So in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a black hat. You can see the bill of it. Yes.
The funny thing about that, I took that hat to trainings, to conferences, everything. Now, this is how crazy some of you law enforcement types are. That hat right there, and it was nasty. But, I mean, imagine how many times
Brody hat,
you know, touched and sampled and stuff.
Well, yeah.
At a conference, you know how the opening night, everybody's busting in to get pens and
absolutely.
All this stuff?
To get all the conference swag.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like T-shirts.
Like T-shirts and maybe Crime Scene Queen stickers.
Yeah. Crime Scene Queen stickers is a must-have. Anyway, that hat disappeared at a conference.
Oh, no. It got stolen. So basically, the crime scene people stole from you or somebody. Maybe it was somebody else that frolicked on it. That just cracks me up.
Somebody's going to get home with their swag bag and find this nasty hat in there and just probably go, what? How did that thing end up in
look
there?
Look, there's the machine. And there's Michelle. Look, I found there's part two of MVAC-ing.
Oh, look at that.
Well, you know it's not a real scene because I'm barehanded.
Yes.
Like
okay.
That.
Okay. Yeah. Laura, she regularly practiced PPE, obviously. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We're not going to be collecting DNA cells of potential victims and suspects with our bare hands, people.
No, we don't. But that's amazing. What a great story. And, you know, that is... I love the MVAC. I didn't know exactly what it was at first, and I didn't know its capabilities. And I think that honestly, this is 100% worth it. So I thank you so much for the knowledge. And I don't know if there's anything else that, you know, you want to
fill us in on. Well, hey, how about you? Why don't you drop your podcast really quick so that people can learn more about what you're doing over there?
Definitely.
Yeah. So my podcast is called All Things Crime.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it got started is because I wasn't able to come to conferences like this during COVID.
Right.
And so I just started reaching out to detectives and people. And now my podcast is oriented around the process.
Okay.
You know, not necessarily casework, but
more.
That's great, though.
You know, how things are solved.
And that's really awesome.
Yeah. And if you guys search All Things Crime on your podcast platform, you're going to see animated Jared in front of a DNA helix, and you're going to immediately know
that
you're in the right place, baby.
That's really neat. Wow.
Yeah, I'd love it. So,
is there anything that you can tell me? Because I was trying to describe to Shelley, like, why is the filter that's in that hourglass part of the machine so unique? Like, what does it do that allows us to catch these cells different than, like, putting any other filter in that space? Like, what's unique about it?
Well, it's mostly just the pore size.
Okay.
So most cells are 2 micron or larger. Okay. Now, a micron is, if I got my math right, I think it's 1/1,000,000th of a meter.
Okay.
So let's see. No, that's millimeter.
Yeah. So it's getting smaller.
So micron is like 1/1,000,000th or something like that. Anyway, it's super small.
Okay.
So the filter size has to be smaller than the smallest cell in order to capture it all on that filter. And so if the smallest cells is 2 micron, that has to be about a quarter of that size. So that's how small it is.
Yep. And then you got to get yourself a scalpel. You got to cut out that filter. Got to give it to your DNA people, which could either be at your local laboratory, but I know that in the cases of some homicides, we would send it to private places because then they could get us our MVET stuff much, much faster.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So there's different avenues and different ways to do this, but it sounds like it's absolutely worth it. I mean, 100%, you know, you sold me on the rope. That's I'm golden, and I'm actually, yeah.
Well, you want to know the future.
Oh, tell us the future. Yes,
please. Here we go.
Yes, please.
Magic 8-Ball, tell me the future.
I was doing a training up in Pennsylvania, and the lab that I was training actually had the a rapid DNA system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So they took the MVAC filter that we were, you know, training with, took one of those, cut it out, sliced it up, put it into the rapid DNA system. And 90 minutes later, they had a profile.
Oh, my God. The shows are coming real.
Oh, my
gosh.
It's
not 20 minutes, but 90 minutes is still... I mean, that's going to be expensive.
Wow.
But amazing,
so
Jared.
So our CSI effect is coming true.
Well, we've done episodes, Jared, where we were, like, explaining to our audience that one of the biggest problems with the crime scene shows that are out there is that there's such an unrealistic expectation of turnaround time for prints, DNA analysis, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So now you're going to sit here and tell me that we were full of crap. And when our podcast is listened to 20 years from now, it's going to age poorly.
It's not going to be like us or fine wine.
You can't do that with like complex mixtures and things like that yet, but someday they will be able to.
Nice. Speaking of complex mixtures, I have to tell you my personal most unique item that I've ever MVAC'd. My coworker had a homicide where a woman was grabbed by her wig and it had the braids in it, and he was gripping her at the base of her skull and then executed her.
Oh.
But he was guiding her around by her hair.
Okay.
So I had to MVAC the wig. The problem with that was the wig wasn't very well made, so it had a lot of dyes.
Oh, okay.
So as I was MVACing, my water was like black.
Oh.
Yeah. But we did end up getting a hit. So,
okay, hold on. So time out. So you're telling me that you can actually take something, and if there's a bunch of different chemicals that are all throughout this, you can still MVAC and get results even with a ton of chemicals.
Jared, what's the most unique item of evidence you have heard about the MVAC processing successfully? Like, I'm sure you get told like success stories. Can you think of something unique?
Well, wig is pretty close.
Yeah.
That's...
Oh, so it was me. I'm the most unique.
You are the mom.
It wasn't my evidence, but what was going on that facilitated me processing somebody else's evidence, because that's not always typical, is I had all of those towels that I mentioned earlier to process.
Yes.
So she asked me, hey, since you're already going to the sheriff's office to MVAC, would you mind taking this with you? Because otherwise then like there's one less person in the unit to respond.
Correct.
And
correct.
I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, send you write your own teeny tiny report. So I ended
Little
up,
did you know,
I know
how many years later you'd be here talking
I know,
about
now,
it.
Now I'm here hanging out with Jared, telling him about that time a wig.
Wig is pretty cool.
It was cool. Just start rattling them off.
There's rocks and bricks, and you know, like there were some bricks that were thrown at some officers during the riots in 2020.
Oh,
and
okay.
They collected a couple of those and got some hits there.
It's not a peaceful protest, people.
Yeah,
that's not how we say we're displeased. That's not how you get your message through. You're allowed to be pissed, and you're allowed to say that, but you're not allowed to throw rocks like a child. All right, done with rant.
Okay, yeah. Laura's rant for the day. It's fine.
So
it's
tell us how you really feel, Laura.
How I really feel is throwing rocks at other people is against the law, and you're not allowed to do it, regardless of their officers or anyone.
There you go.
Very true.
And namaste.
There you go. Namaste. Namaste right here, because people are throwing rocks outside.
And namaste.
Yeah.
Oh. No, it's om.
Okay.
CSI Yogi hashtag.
You know, they've got DNA off of just about any type of clothing. I know rugs and shirts and pants and ski masks.
Mattresses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here's a cool one.
Ooh, yes, please.
There was a sheet that was drenched in, like, gasoline, I think.
Okay.
And they threw it under a cop car and lit it on fire.
Okay.
And so everything burned up. Fortunately, the car didn't catch on fire.
Okay.
But the edges of the sheet that weren't burned,
okay,
they took those and MVAC'd them and they got them.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the luck. The
no,
luck.
Not that's not luck. That's MVAC.
No, but the luck that the sheet didn't burn all the way up, so there was even the
ability
to MVAC.
That's luck.
Oh, here's another one.
Oh yeah.
A wick from a Molotov cocktail.
Whoa. That's a good one, Jared.
Yeah. So wow. This guy lit it and threw it, but when he threw it, it went out. So they pulled
the wick out.
Wow.
No thanks, Ninhydrin. We got you. Yeah. Well, do you remember what the wick was made of? Was it paper? Like, what was the wick made of?
No, it was some cloth.
Okay, so never mind. Ninhydrin wouldn't have mattered anyway. So scratch that, everybody, and don't at me later. I thought it was paper. Okay? Don't at me.
They have done a suicide note.
They MVAC'd a suicide note?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay, how did that not turn into mush? Like, can you explain how that would happen?
Well, you got to move pretty fast, and you got to use the vented head. That doesn't suck down on the paper as much.
In my day, we had one head for our MVAC. How many heads do you have now?
Well, there's two.
On
the very end of the sampling head,
okay,
there's a blue skirt that's
I know about the skirt.
It's kind of the pliable plastic.
Interesting.
Well, what we did was we punched four holes into that, and that allows more airflow past that so it won't suck down on... It was originally designed for skin sampling.
Okay, so after, as soon as we're finished with this, we're going to run over there. We're going to take a couple photographs, and then we're going to have to post them.
Yeah, the MVAC machine.
So people
exactly, so that they know this blue skirt that they're talking about. Don't apologize.
And make sure to send them to our YouTube channel so they can...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes, and if you're going to die, make sure you make a big mess so that we can use the MVAC machine and solve your murder.
Absolutely.
And also take your local crime scene to the paper and keep it interesting. We love you guys so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Crime Scene Queens is a Q Code Media production. Executive producers, David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Ryan Countshouse. Edited by Nate Dufort. Theme song and music by Darren Johnson.